Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello and welcome to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you're with us as always, no matter where you find us, on iTunes or Audio Boom, or of course at golftripx.com. You can find us at Golf Trip Experts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Darren, you should know by now, you can find him at Golf Getaways on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me, Mitch Lawrence, at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E, throughout the online cosmos. Darren, we're always excited about doing a podcast episode. I think both of us are, we've been jacked for this ever since we found out we were going to get a chance to talk to one of the truly great voices in our game today on Talking Golf Getaways.
We've been trying to get Jay Revel on the show for a long time. We've talked about it. We've tried to travel with Jay, and the golf gods have conspired against us, but it is all going to come to fruition today. We're gonna talk for what's going to seem like forever about all kinds of good stuff, and that is coming up.
Yes, it is.
But first, Mitch, as we like to say now, we're going to talk real quickly. What's the best thing you've seen, done, or talked about, or the best place you've been this week?
Okay, I'm going to give you one quick one because it was an interesting development. A good friend of mine, Mary Beth Lacey, who does media and public relations in golf, wonderful woman, had contacted me about seeing if I wanted to get a Golf Logic green reading book.
Ooh.
Actually, Golf Logics is the way, okay, way it goes. Green reading book. My first impulse was to say no thanks, because I'm not big on that stuff. As you know, you and I are hickory players. Pretty rare for us even to, you know, other than kind of looking at the ground maybe or feeling a yardage. So I'm not into that. And my first thought was also, I'm not into slowing the game down at all. And I was thinking, do I really need to stand on a green? And then I thought, on further reflection, I know Jay will be happy about this because I went deeper, which is what Jay does all the time. I went a little deeper and I thought, this would not be anything I'd be interested in at my home course, Shaftesbury, or the other courses, say, in Myrtle Beach that I play a lot. But if I were on a golf trip and had never played a golf course, and I could use it without slowing down the pace of the other players, would it be valuable? So I said to Mary Beth, sure, let me grab a copy if I can. And they sent me a copy of Shaftesbury Glen, which is the course that Ava and I, my wife, usually play. And on using it, at first it was a little weird because I've really never used a green reading book. But on using it on greens that I knew, granted, but there's all kinds of subtle breaks and different things. And I thought, I'm going to try this out. And I did. And I actually really, really enjoyed using it. I figured out how to do it in a way where, while the other people I was playing with, my wife, our good friend Mark Lancaster, when they would be getting to the green and getting ready to putt and whatever, I'd take a quick look. And you can tell pretty quickly just by, they have a putting break part of the book on one page and a heat map on the other page. And wow, that's a little bizarre. The heat map is used in the fairway to tell where the different green elevations are on the green. If you want to try to play a shot to a portion of the green, say, that's raised and you want to run it around to the other side, that's fine. Now, you and I know both, in my game, I'm not that good. Though I would love to know where I want to hit it, it doesn't all come out that way. But the actual putting break part worked and did help me. I felt like I was a little more confident over putts that I may have questioned before. So I just want to give a shout out to them. I think if you're thinking about traveling, and they have, I think at the last total was 14,000 plus golf courses in the States, 35,000 plus worldwide. So they have a wide variety of places you can get the Green Logics green reading book from. And I just thought, if you're going someplace you've never been and you want to give it a try, might not be a bad idea. So you can find it at GolfLogics, that's LOGIX.com, GolfLogics.com. They have all kinds of information. If not the most popular, one of the most popular golf-related apps already for a number of years. And this is an addition to what they do with that app. So if people are familiar with them, they might want to check this out. I just thought it was an interesting traveling golfer possibility. What about you, Darren?
That's very, very cool. Real quick shout out. What are you drinking today?
I am, well, knowing that Jay was going to be on and we had a lot to talk about, I have 6 gallons of water and 6 shots of Fireball.
So you're basically pandemic ready just for this?
I told my wife I'll be down tomorrow for breakfast.
I wanted to give a shout out real quick to, I'm drinking an American light whiskey called The General from Mott and Sons. That's from your neck of the woods, actually, in the Carolinas. And I got it from our friend Carl Nagy, who is a listener and a friend and fellow Hickory enthusiast. And I wanted to give a shout out. Carl sent me some, you know, you and I use these repurposed Hickory Shaft wooden tees.
Yep.
That Carl does a great job of threading a string through, basically, so that you don't lose them. And these tees last a long time. And I asked him for some extras the other day, and he sent me this package. So this package arrived, and you know, you talked in a previous episode about he had sent you some Sevi aftershave, and we had a laugh about that. Well, I get this package with these tees in the mail, and inside it is a note card, basically, that that he writes a little note on. And the thing I was fascinated by was the note card was a movie poster for The Graduate. And I thought, you talk about just something that is totally cool and personalized and just hilariously funny. Just wrote a little note on the back of it, but the front of it, and it's a note
card.
It's
a picture of Anne Bancroft with her leg up looking through at Dustin Hoffman standing
exactly.
in the doorway.
It's the actual poster.
Right.
And so, so anyway, shout out to Carl. I know he's probably listening out there. You know, my best thing this week, I started thinking about summer's here. You're going to play golf in the hot weather in a lot of places in this country. I've played a lot of golf in Las Vegas, and I know that it gets as hot as anywhere in Las Vegas in June, July, August. And so last summer, I played a place called the Golf Club at Sunrise in Las Vegas. And when I lived in Las Vegas a number of years ago, it seems like forever ago, it was a dog track. I don't even remember what it was called at that time. This is a course that started as Winterwood Country Club, which was a Dick Wilson design. Like I said, it had another name. I honestly just can't remember. Then Kemper Sports came in, and they brought a guy in with a great name himself, Randy Heckenkemper, who has a background in the Nicholas Corporation, also worked with Tom Weisskopf and Jay Morrish. They opened it up in 2016. It's not, if you're a bucket list hunter, Mitch, you're not going to the club at Sunrise. It's but ironically, it's right next door to Royal Links, where you and I have been together. There's one hole where you can actually see the Royal Links Castle Clubhouse across the road. So it's right in that area of town, but that puts it in the heart of a housing tract. It's built along the Las Vegas Wash, and you would think to yourself, you know, I don't know that this is at best just a community golf course that the people who live around it play. But Heckenkemper did such a great job with kind of playing with the wash, interacting with it, with new holes. And it just became a really fun, interesting golf course. It's a crazy contrast to Royal Links. But here's the trick, and this is what I wanted to point out. When they renovated it, they went with past Palom greens, which you don't see very much inland across the country. But they love the heat. So when I reached out to play it last year, I asked Matt Kalbach, the general manager there, who I knew from his days at Monarch Dunes out here on the Central Coast. And I said, you know, what's the golf course like? And he said, well, I'll tell you what. The greens are the best you'll find in the Las Vegas Valley during the summer. And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, you take all that with a grain of salt when somebody says it. But when I got out there, he was exactly right. The putting surfaces were fantastic. The agronomy on the golf course is great. And it was something like 107 the day I played it. So, you know, it really holds up well. The clubhouse is great. It's actually named after Winterwood. It's named the Winterwood Grill in there. It's an open layout. You're seeing more of these now everywhere you go. Check-in desk, merchandise, restaurant, and bar, all in one big room. It promotes camaraderie. Obviously, I'm not sure what they're doing right now with the whole COVID thing and social distancing, but I'm just saying that when I was there last year, the food was great. The beer was cold. It's a great no-nonsense golf experience. It's incredibly affordable. And like I said, if you're not just out bucket list hunting, if you just want to have fun with some friends, you know, go hang at the club at Sunrise for a day in Las Vegas if you're out there. It's a nice departure from, you know, casinos at night. Get your golf in, hit some fun shots, and I can't recommend it highly enough. And it was truly a surprise to me at how much work and improvement Kemper had done.
That sounds actually great. It does. You know, when I lived in L.A., just quickly, I loved going to Palm Springs during the summer when it was 110.
Yeah.
And we would get up 6 o'clock. We'd get out early. We'd be finished by 9 at the latest. We'd hang during the day. We'd go swimming, pool, whatever, and then go back out at the end of the day, you know, before sunset and get 9 holes in. I loved going down there. So
yep.
If we were traveling at this point, I wouldn't mind going to get the club.
And speaking of traveling, one last thing before we get to Jay, as we've been saying all along on the podcast, if all goes as planned with the pandemic, Golf Trip X and Golf Newsnet are heading to Ireland and Northern Ireland in August of 2021. Going to be an epic trip with some of my favorite courses and hotels, including Royal County Down, Ardglass, Royal Portrush, and more. We're going to stay at the Slieve Donard, among other places. Spots are getting reserved quickly, so reach out to Ryan Ballingy, our good friend Ryan Ballingy here at Golf Newsnet. Reach out to him on Twitter or go to golfnewsnet.com to get more information and to get in on the fun.
All right, August of 2021, that's what, 3 weeks from now?
It felt like April 2020 took 5 years. So
in my dreams, it's 3 weeks from now. All right, let's get to it with a bit about our esteemed guest, Jay Revel. Just some surface facts. He lives in Tallahassee, Florida, works as a public affairs professional with experience in public policy, advocacy, public relations, and content creation for community-based causes.
Wow.
Here's a hint. The words public and community should give you a clue as to who Jay really is. His wife, Sarah, his wonderful young daughter, Winnie, share his life, as does Leon the dog. And I mention them because they play a huge role in much of Jay's incredible writing and pondering. What Jay calls himself on the website simply says his website, Golf Scribe, which is, to me, the understatement of the year. He's written for some of our game's finest literary platforms in both magazine and digital forms, such as Golfer's Journal, McKellar, Golf.com, Golf Advisor. And a couple of years ago, he started his own golf media company to share his expertise on creating compelling golf content, a task at which he is a master. Jay Revel is, simply put, and at his core, the most worthy of storytellers for those of us who love the game. His new book is The 9 Virtues of Golf. We're going to dig into that. It is now the number one new release golf book on Amazon. Should tell you all you need to know. And that book proves what I have said about him in spades. You can find Jay on Twitter at Jay Revel, R-E-V-E-L-L, on Instagram at Jay Revel Writes, or on his fantastic website, which I mentioned, jrevel.com, which also includes, and these are great, his daily musings on the game. Thank you for being patient with us, Jay. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways, our friend.
It is so good to be with you guys. I appreciate that glowing introduction. It's been a fun ride the past few years getting into this golf world as a writer, and you know, this just sort of feels like a dream come true, really. The opportunity to be able to talk about golf and all the things I love about it with people who share in that joy is something that means a lot to me. So I appreciate you guys having me on. As they say, long-time listener, first-time caller. So I'm glad to be with you.
Hey, Jay, well, I got to give you a shout-out here, and Mitch alluded to it, something you're doing on Instagram where you're telling a golf story every day. Now, as you know, I started to do that this year as well at the beginning. I thought I had this great idea. I'll talk about a different golf course because all the golf courses I have, I'll talk about one every day. And I think I got into maybe month 2 and then just couldn't keep up the pace. And so I am so phenomenally impressed by the fact that you are chugging away and putting one of these out every day, telling a new story every day for all what is 366 days of this year, given that it's a leap year. I'm blown away that you're just still on the horse and going at it hard.
Well, I appreciate it. I remember you and I were texting about that early on, and I will tell you, I thought the task was going to be a little easier, you know, having the pandemic kind of lock us down, kind of made for a few days, it kind of felt like a stretch, but it also opened up some pretty interesting opportunities to think about the game in different ways. And, it's been a really fun journey. When you're writing about golf, you really gotta, I think, put some thought into it. I always loved the old expression of, you know, the smaller the ball, the better the sports writing. And with golf, you really gotta think about it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of angles you can cover, but you gotta try to say, in some ways, the same thing 366 different ways. So it's been a fun adventure, and fortunately, people seem to dig it. So I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Well, one of the things I like about it, Jay, is you're not locked into a specific length of muse. You know, some days there's longer stories and thoughts that you have. Other days it can just be a few paragraphs of something that you happen to think about and then lock into. And I'm with Darren. I think it's great. I look forward to him now. I look forward to seeing him every day.
I sure appreciate it.
All right. Before we get to the other gems in the book, and I have to say, I got the book. Again, you can get it on Amazon. I downloaded it on Kindle. I have it on my phone. I have it on a tablet. And whenever I would find some moments, I would just sit down and make sure I had the time to really give to you to digest what you were writing and how you wrote it and the words you were giving us. And I can't, I'm not going to do this whole podcast because I want to. But I'm just going to say that it's one of the best, I don't even know the word I'm looking for, because it's more than just a book. It's literally a life's philosophy that you give us throughout the book and the examples you give in the book. But everything in there is worthy of consideration and worthy of taking with us from the day you read it forward. And I know I'll be doing that. I want to start, because to me, this is such a great thing and a great place to start, obviously, with you, which is you and your wonderful family history in the game. I'm going to start this, and I'm going to do this a little during this podcast. I'm going to throw out a quote, which I found to be amazing, and then you can run with it. So the quote I'm going to start with, which made me laugh out loud and then think about it, you said, "If golf is a drug, I was born in an opium den," which just kind of blew me away. It almost told me everything I needed to know about what you were about to say. In this case, right next to the nine-hole Havana Golf and Country Club. Talk to us about that, about your grandfather. Just go ahead and give us a little insight on that.
I have been just incredibly blessed in my life to have golf play such a prominent role in it. And I literally grew up in the game. My grandfather's name is Ed Bates. He's 86 years young, still plays 4 days a week. Shoots his age or better just about every time. He was been a big fan of the what I call the COVID rules, because I think that's helped his putting a little bit. He's been playing Plinko up there with the guys, it seems like. He was a longtime club pro there. We got a little nine-hole golf course called Havana Golf and Country Club. I always call it Havana National, sort of half jokingly. And, there's a little neighborhood out there. The course is sort of just one big loop around this neighborhood that I grew up in a little small town, two stoplight town. And we were on the fourth hole, our little house. If you over slice it on the right, you're going to wind up under my tree house. And, when I was a kid, that was my playground. That was what we did. Me and my brother and my next door neighbor, we're all very close, still very close. And, from sun up to sundown, we played golf. I had a dog back then, who predated Leon, named Skeet, who was a little mountain feist, a little terrier looking dog that followed us around the golf course. And when I wasn't playing, I was spending time with my grandfather and you know, around these guys that seemed like they were larger than life, these personalities, you know, in this little small town country club. And I just was obsessed with them. Those guys were kind of my heroes. And it's sad a lot of them are gone today. But when I was, you know, just from being a little tyke all the way up through my teenage years, I mean, I spent every waking day out there. When I was just a small kid, I would just go sit up there and hang out with my granddad. I remember going back in the afternoons. They used to have a big poker game every day at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd go back there and watch those guys and kind of learn how to cuss a little bit. And they just were all obsessed with golf. The whole town was obsessed with golf. It was just one of those great little places that that the game had taken a hold of. And it totally shaped who I am as a human. And, you know, my grandmother is a big part of that too. They were just a real golfing family. Their son, my uncle, Ben Bates, was on the PGA Tour for 4 or 5 years when I was a early teen. And we used to go travel every summer, watch 3 or 4 different tournaments. I met all the great players, from Tiger Woods, you know, on down when I was a kid. And that really got me, you know, pretty hooked too. And, Havana was just this, you know, petri dish for golf nuts. You know, I mean, if you had a little bit of love for golf and you spend any time out there, it was only going to grow. And it just every single day, that's what we did. I mean, there was an old pecan tree out there that I just used to go and pick up the driving range, and I'd hit 500 balls a day. You know, I used to love reading books about Ben Hogan, and I just thought that was cool, you know, as hell. And I'd sit out there and try to hit balls till my hands bled and then go jump in the pool afterwards. I mean, it was a great way to grow up. And, you know, and we had free reign. I mean, you know, when I left in the morning, told, you know, mom bye, they didn't see us again until dinner. And that's very much kind of a throwback maybe to an older time. But, and there were nights where we'd be playing, we'd get these competitive matches going. And, you know, we'd call mom and dad and get them to bring the car out on the last hole and turn the lights on so we could putt. You know, I mean, it was just a total just golf environment.
I don't know that there's anything better than finishing a round in the pitch dark. It's one of the truly great things. If you're out there and you're listening and you've never done it, you got to find a time to. I've had some of the most fun I've ever had on the golf course after the sun has fallen behind the mountains and it's getting dark and you're fighting and you're racing and you're trying to win a match or beat somebody. It's super cool, man.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and you know, I don't when I hear that line, yeah, you know, I certainly don't like to make light of addiction, but it is an addiction. I mean, the game is big. You know, there's plenty of people I've met in my life who have kind of gone sideways because they've been so addicted to golf. But, you know, it's like anything else, everything in moderation. But where I grew up, it makes moderation in golf pretty tough.
Well, I think that's true. But I also think there's a lot of people that have been saved by the game.
Oh, there's no question. I'm one of them.
All of us who feel the way we do, in our own little way, we go, okay, we're lucky we found this thing. One thing before we leave the Havana Golf Country Club, and you mentioned that you loved the stories about Hogan and your hands bleeding. What I loved was that your grandfather said to you, he told me, this is a quote, he told me, I'm going to show you how to hook the ball, and I want you to spend your whole life fighting it, which made me think of Hogan.
That's it. Yeah.
You have a lot of connections to Ben.
You know, yeah. No doubt about it. Yeah, Grant's all right. A big Hogan fan.
Hey, let's move on. This is a quote that I think, and we're going to touch on other parts of the book. But I wanted to get to this one kind of up top because it's what Darren and I hope to do with Talking Golf Getaways. This is another quote. To be a golfer is to be a wanderer, and that is my identity. The game is, at its very essence, a walkabout through the fields, forests, towns, and dunes of the world. For that reason, a golfer's soul yearns to journey. As a golfer, my thirst for adventure is unquenchable. I think that nail went directly into my head. But there's the chapter in the book that deals with this specifically, because all of it kind of does. You've titled How to Travel for Golf, Thoughts on Where to Go, How to Be There, and What to Remember, which obviously is really important to Darren, to me, to those of us who love to travel. If you can give us, and I don't want people not to read the book, I'm not going to give them the whole thing here, but if you can just kind of give us a brief rundown of what you included in a couple important ways, why you picked the topics, why you think they're important. And again, this is brilliant stuff to me, by the way.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, so for me, my thoughts on traveling for golf have just come miles and miles in the last, probably 5 years. I've always loved, getting on the road for a golf trip. And I would tell you, sort of right out of college when I was kind of really coming back to the game again and traveling with friends, the way in which we would choose where to go was not very refined. My own palate was probably not very refined yet. But, fortunately, we live in a world today where, you pull up your cell phone, you can learn anything you want to learn. And at incredible depths. I started really going into reading about golf course architecture and traveling about the game. I mean, when you read a book by, the wonderful Tom Coyne or one of Tom Doak's confidential guides, you start peeling back layers and learning things that completely reshape your understanding of the game. And, for me, traveling was sort of the eye opener. And to tell maybe a really good story about that, I have always written a lot professionally, in grad school, wrote a ton, and all throughout my career, I've just done a lot of different writing, much about, things here in Tallahassee and public policy and all kinds of stuff. But I had never written a word about golf up until about 3 years ago. And I took a trip. A friend of mine was getting married just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And y'all probably know where this is headed. But, I wrangled up a couple of the guys that were going to the wedding. I said, hey, we got to go. There's a place we got to go see. We got about 4 hours, to kill. And let's go get in the car. I said, we're only going to go play 9 holes, but we got to go. Let's get up and move. So we go up to Sweetens Cove. Took us about an hour to get there, and we're coming around the corner and it's like this field of dreams moment, right? I mean, you just kind of come out there and you see this place. And again, this was, sort of before a place like that had really taken off. I mean, it might have been right before, right after that great Dylan DeShere piece that was in New York Times.
Yep.
Had come out. And there was no one there. We had the whole place to ourselves on a Saturday. This would have been, 2016 or 17, I guess. And I was just absolutely floored by what I found there. I mean, to me, it was one of the most incredible discoveries that I had ever come across. And I'll never forget it. I remember Monday morning being sitting in a meeting at my office and just still being floored by it. I mean, my heart was still pounding by what I had experienced. And I had so many thoughts running through my head that I couldn't help but start to write them down. And that really was the first little golf piece that I ever had written. And my friends over at Sugarloaf Social Club had posted it on their site. And that was kind of a whole nother level of addiction when people started pinging me about it and being interested in it. But, so for me, when you talk about traveling, there's just so many things you want to look for. For me, I want to find golf courses that are great walks. Even if you weren't schlepping a bag of clubs around on your back, would the place make for a very enjoyable walk where you get to see nature and be out in it and really just experience? And then, the architecture itself, Once you really start to scratch that surface of understanding golf course architecture and appreciate it like art, you're going to go and seek places that really put that on showcase. So those are very important. I love history. History to me is so fascinating. I love, writing little golf course histories and stuff about some places that I've been. And anytime you can go somewhere, that's not to say that, all new places are not interesting, but I just love going to places that are old and have been there, and especially from that golden age. And they don't even have to necessarily be what I would call, spectacular golf facilities, but a place that's got that's very attractive in nature or has a unique setting and a really interesting story is sometimes just as good as the nicest resort course that you're going to come across. And those are things that I like. And obviously when you're traveling, there's also components of eating and drinking and lodging that are important too. And I like to try to go and find places that are different. I don't stay in a lot of Hampton Inns per se. Nothing wrong with a Hampton Inn. Sometimes that's all you can get. You go to Sweetens Cove, you're staying at the Holiday Inn. That's about all you can really find. But I'd rather go stay in an interesting little inn somewhere, and maybe with a little pub down the street, and kind of see what the locals are up to, and stir up some trouble. That's the stuff that I find that is really complimentary to a good golf experience. And so when I wrote that piece, I just tried to kind of frame up my mindset. If I'm sitting down and I'm going on a little golf trip, or if I'm going on any trip and I know I can squeeze some golf in, these are sort of the filters that I try to process my decision making through. Again, something like Tom Doug's Confidential Guide will tell you, if I can get where I'm, within 100 miles of something pretty interesting, I can certainly make a detour to go see it. So, that's just kind of my mindset on golf travel. And I have found that the coolest part is once you get home, spending some time trying to, collect your thoughts on it and appreciating what you've seen and experienced is really maybe the most rewarding part of it all. That kind of spending that time to contemplate what you've been through on the journey is kind of the point for me,
It's kind of amazing how different experiences shape that journey. I mean, you talk about your visit to Sweetens a lot. I know you and I started talking to each other really a lot about Mike Strantz. And I mean, you had a very fortunate relationship with Forrest Fesler, and that really helped shape your entire philosophy and so much of what I heard you say in that answer right there, about things that are unique and things that are different and seeking out golf design that makes you think. I know a lot of that came from this conversation you had with the late Forrest Fesler and really just plunged you into looking more at Mike Strantz, who we talk about all the time on the podcast, but kind of culminated for you last year with this exceptional oral history that you wrote about Tobacco Road, one of our favorite places.
Yeah, Forrest was a great guy. I saw his widow Debbie just the other day, and everybody misses him. He was just a great conversation and someone who. Whose role in the game probably goes, way underrated. Through conversations with him, I got into, a bit of an obsession over the work that he did with Mike Strantz and led to that great project. I just loved working with the gang at the Golfers Journal on that, and Mark Stewart and Tony and everybody, and Morgan, all those guys at Tobacco Road were just a real treat to spend some serious time with. And what was so cool to me about studying Strantz, and I feel like, to your point, once you start studying him, you really can't stop. And there's so
no
many
doubt.
There's a lot of depth there. And there's a few things about him and his legacy on the game that I think are quite profound. You know, one to me, and I think if you go back and you look at sort of this pivotal period in the mid to late 90s where golf course architecture really started to change, you know, there were a couple of things that happened. You had, you know, obviously the Sand Hills project with Bill and Ben out in Mullen. And then you have, you know, Tom Doak starts to really, you know, gain some traction in the world. And then the other piece there is Mike. And what Mike was doing, I think, that was so revolutionary was what Mark Stewart liked to refer to as 360 degrees of design. If you go out into any of Mike's courses, and in particular at Tobacco Road, you can be dropped in any particular place on the entire golf course. And you can look around in 360 degrees, and everything is in place. And that's the artist in him, right? I mean, you know, when you're an artist, especially if you've ever taken any painting classes, you know, they tell you, you have to fill the canvas with detail. You can't neglect one corner of a canvas because that's actually where your eye will go to the neglected places. So with Mike being that trained artist, everything was tied in. No matter which direction you look, it's all tied in. And most golf courses, you think about sort of your standard run-of-the-mill golf course, I guess, you know, anywhere USA. You know, if you stand in the middle of the fairway and you look around in every direction, there's only really one direction that it makes sense as a golf course, right? And that's looking forward at the green. But what Mike did was everything made sense. I mean, you could stand on any one of those holes and imagine playing it back the other way because it looks as though it was natural that way. And you can't tell the difference also with him between the man-made and the natural. I mean, he just blurs those lines so beautifully. And it's such a just visual treat. And, you know, an architect like that is worthy of study. And when you're traveling and when you're going around and spending time in unique places, you really need to go to a place like that and play it two or three, four times over a stretch of a few days. Because
yep.
That's how you're going to really gain that appreciation for it. Yeah, I just got back from my annual guys trip, which was unique, all things considered right now, you know, with the pandemic and everything, but we were able to pull it off. We went down to Stream Song. They've only got the black course open right now, which actually I think worked out to our advantage because we played just the black course 3 days in a row. Sweet. And by the time I walked off, you know, yeah, I was incredible. By the time I walked off the golf course, you know, Saturday or Sunday afternoon, I think I'm convinced that's the best one on the property now. I, you know, and again, I'm probably a little biased because I got to spend so much time on it and really get to know it intimately. And there's some details out there that you just can't pick it all up in one round. So, you know, you have to treat it sort of like a course of study, you know.
I had that same thing happen at Tobacco Road, you know, since we're talking about that, where I took a group of friends out there. We've talked about it on the podcast, and for my friendly Bummage Schmoy's Cup that people listeners will know. And when we were setting the trip up, the guys kept asking me, "Well, where else are we going to play?" And I was like, "Well, we don't need to play anywhere else, and you'll see why when we get there." And you know, we played I think four or five rounds on it. We went down to Pinehurst for a day as well, but. You know, there's so much to that, and we preach it all the time here on the podcast that playing a golf course over and over and over again, that's a great golf course that has so many different possibilities, is something that so many golfers overlook.
Oh, no, without question. I mean, and, you know, again, I'll go back to just this most recent experience. I had the same experience at Tobacco Road, too, when I went up there for that piece. I probably played it four times and, you know, 4 days. And when you see the different looks, because you're hitting different shots, you're getting different pins, you're hitting different putts. You just have more room to appreciate it. And it really makes a huge difference, I think, in how you shape an opinion. And in a place, like Tobacco Road is one that, you know, splits a lot of opinions. But I think, you know, if you took those people who probably didn't like it, maybe on a first tear around, and let them play it three or four times over a short span, I think their opinion might change.
All right, let's move from Tobacco Road, as long as we're traveling a little. Let's move from Tobacco Road and Sweetens to a couple of other places that people would have heard about and that you deal with in the book. One of them, and I love this story too, I have a twin brother named Matthew. I was drawn to and fascinated by the relationship with your brother Hilton. You described it at one point as kind of the yin to each other's yang. You had differences growing up. But golf was the thing that you both had together. The way you put it, growing up, and we talked about Havana Country Club and your house being there, you said we likely would still be different no matter where we had laid our heads. But because of the game we learned there, we will always know how to find each other. Golf is at the root of our souls, and because of that, we really aren't so different after all. That hit me hard because of my relationship with my own twin brother. But it also incorporates a great place. I have not yet been there. I know I want to get there. And that's Ballyneal. Talk to us a little bit about the experience with Hilton.
When I first sat down and start write that piece, it was going to be much more about Ballyneal and the trip we took. And you know, the more I kind of kept playing around and editing it, it just changed, as these things will do. But what inspired the piece was we took a trip together. My brother lives in Denver. He's been out there for a couple of years. I like to say he enjoys the lax legal environment there. And that's a very politically correct way to put it at my family dinner table. Hilton has been hanging out there in Colorado a while, and you know, he's really into the music scene and all that. He goes to a lot of the shows at Red Rocks, and so I kind of said, you know, we've never really taken a trip together, just the two of us, and probably was overdue. And I said, you know, I want to show him a few things, you know, in golf that he might not know, and maybe let him show me a few things that I might not know with sort of how he's living his life out there. And so we put together this really great itinerary that we just had an absolute blast. And the first leg of the trip, we actually played out at Common Ground, which I kind of used in the name of that piece. But which, if you've never been in Denver, just outside of Denver, I guess in Aurora, you have the Common Ground Golf Course, which is a which is done by Tom Doak's Renaissance Golf Team, and it is one of the great municipal facilities in America. I mean, it just for $50, it's truly an incredible place to play golf. Really wonderful golf course. And then we left there. Went out to Ballyneal, which is about 3.5 hours outside of Denver. And Ballyneal is, it's like, I can't get that place out of my head, you know, a couple years later, right? I mean, it's just, it's a remarkable place. The way I describe it to people is, you know, if you could imagine a map of the United States and you put your finger on the place that's probably the absolute furthest from an ocean, that's where Ballyneal is. And it's so far out in the middle of nowhere. It is so removed from any kind of population. It's really hard to appreciate until you go. You drive from Denver and you kind of get out of the, you lose sight of the mountains, and then you're in these sort of hills, and you kind of get into this rhythm of you're seeing these, I call them grain silo towns, mm-hmm. right? Where it's just like one grain silo and like a gas station and a street lamp, and then you don't see another one for another 30 miles. And then you go through about four or five of those, and then you hang a right, and you go down this dirt road for like 20 miles. And next thing you know, the hills really start to intensify, and you're in this dunescape, and you come around this hill, and you come to the top of it, and you see one of the most majestic-looking places for golf that I've ever laid eyes on. And they've got a great facility out there. They've got the 18-hole course. They've added a 12-hole short course.
How good is that? The Mulligan course.
It is. It's the best short course I've ever played. We went out there. Let's see. That was on a Sunday. We played. So Sunday, what we did is we played two loops on the Mulligan course. It was the day that Tiger Woods won at East Lake. And I remember because we played the first loop, we came off the golf course, went in, grabbed a beer, And everybody who was on the property was in there watching that, completely captivated. And that was cool. Everybody let out a big roar, you know, when he won. And then we went back out again. You know, at sundown, you come in, it got this incredible little, you know, small clubhouse restaurant in there. Best cowboy ribeye you can ever get a hold of. And the next day we go out for 36 holes on the big course. And it was just one of this, just a tremendous bonding experience. I mean, we got to, you know, again, trek around this just majestic golf course that is truly, you know, it's way underrated. I mean, not it doesn't get nearly enough praise as it should. You know, some of it's in the shadow of Sand Hills, not too far away, and it's so remote, but it's one of the great golf courses in America. The scale of it is just off the charts. And it's just truly a great setting for golf.
Jay, I've said a lot on the podcast that, if Ballyneal, if that 18 hole course were on a body of water somewhere, it would be the number one course in the country, without a doubt.
Definitely. It would be top five all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, it is that good. I mean, it kind of haunts me. Like, it was so good. I mean, they're so gracious. They will let you do the sort of once in a lifetime trip. You know, anybody can kind of ride out there and get on. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I would have done it for 4 days instead of two, you know, like, but you know, it was great. We had an awesome experience. They also had the best milkshakes in the world out there. So, you know, when Hilton and I kind of, you know, coming down off that experience, I was just really putting a lot of thought into our relationship, and that's where this story was born. And, you know, our relationship has had some pretty, you know, tense moments, and, you know, I think we actually see the world more closely than we probably let on, but, we have had our moments where it, you know, is not always pleasant, and we bicker like brothers, and, you know, just like I said in the piece, you know, like two brothers in the back of the car, you know, driving to Disney World. But golf has been the glue that really not only has kept us together, but, it's also sort of a place where we can come together and have peace talks, which is nice. And, I talked to him earlier this week, and, you know, we're trying to devise a way to get a little golf trip together this year, even with all this craziness going on. But he's a great dude, and love him to death. And, you know, again, I think golf has really helped as we've, you know, grown as adults to bring us back together.
One line you wrote that is fantastic, I think, is that Hilton equates golf to a Grateful Dead concert. You treat it more like a day on Walden Pond.
Well, you know, I'm pretty meditative out there on the golf course. I can kind of slip into, I don't know, sort of a transcendental state of sorts. And, you know, he's out there kind of just jamming, you know, so it's fun to kind of be together and watch how those sort of styles of appreciation both clash and meld together beautifully at times. But we've got a little tournament over in Havana that happens every summer, and a couple of years ago we got together and won that thing, and it was just really cool for both of us to sort of catch our stride at the same time, a little best ball tournament, and finally get our names on that plaque that we've been staring up at ever since we were kids, you know.
That is awesome. Jay, I feel like your brother when we talk about some things. And so I want to just quick hit on a few things. I mean, your idea of letting go of score, going to hitting non-traditional clubs, or I guess traditional clubs, you know, not the clubs that people are hitting today. Obviously, Mitch and I hit hickories. Mitch is playing some persimmons nowadays. You certainly do that as well. And then, you know, I play every round of golf I can until it gets super hot like it is now with my dog Ragsy. You have Leon out there with you. I see pictures of it all the time. You know, just talk about that whole, I guess, sense of soul that we share in terms of this kind of what people would call different and maybe even crazy ways of embracing the game?
You know, I think about it sort of in a way. My game has gotten, you know, it ebbs and flows every year, I feel like. But I'm back again to playing pretty good golf. The pandemic has been largely good for my golf game. You know, you got a lot of time. And especially back in, you know, March and April when the weather down here was so good. I mean, I was playing almost every night, you know. And what I have found when you talk about playing with hickories and persimmons and spending those hours out there sort of, I think I'm stealing this from Chivas Irons or something, you know, the plunging the depths of the game. I mean, what I have found is that when you're doing those things and you're sort of out there experimenting with all these other different ways of playing and trying different shots, I think you can, you sort of tear down some walls in your mind about what is it, you know, how you can play or can't play. You find new ways of establishing some freedoms in your thinking on the golf course. And as you guys know, with the older clubs, the game and the way you play is very different, very different. It requires more imagination. Because and I suppose it's because of the more rudimentary nature of those tools, you just have to be a more imaginative player. You have to learn how to hit a variety of golf shots. And I think, you know, people will tell you today that you can't or don't hit more imaginative golf shots in modern equipment, but I have found that you can still hit them.
Yeah.
And in fact, the more that I learn how to hit unique shots with older clubs, or just when I'm out there goofing around with Leon, you know, four or five holes at a time when score means absolutely nothing, the more confident I am to try those things when I am playing in some sort of competition or in a match with friends or, you know, in the Saturday group or whatever. And I think I have a unique ability to pull off shots that most people just don't see. And yeah, that's because 99% of the time they don't ever have to.
It's funny you say that. I mean, we'll get to the dogs in a minute, but Mitch and I were actually talking offline earlier today about, I just played golf yesterday at a place called Ridge Creek here in Central California, a really great Heathlands golf course. And it's playing super hard and fast right now, like beautifully, the best Heathlands golf course you'll find anywhere in the West, to be honest. And it's a little municipal in a little town called Dinuba, California. And when I went out there, played yesterday afternoon, it was 100 degrees. I was just out there by myself, pulling my little Park Ridge vintage trolley with me, playing hickories. And I decided on the first hole, I was not going to hit a wedge anywhere unless I had to carry a bunker. So anywhere that I had a running shot, I was going to hit a running shot. I have a jigger. I talk about it all the time on the podcast here. And I hit these jigger shots throughout the entire round. And I shot 80. I had my best round since the pandemic started by a mile. And it reminded me exactly of what you're saying, that we learn to hit these shots. If you play the different clubs, you play the older clubs, it forces you to learn to hit these shots that nobody else even considers. I mean, everybody grabs a lob wedge and tries to spin something into the wedge and, you know, into the flag. And that whole idea that Mitch and I are always talking about on the podcast, and you and I have talked about, it allows you to just completely reconfigure how you think about golf and golf shots, and not so much scoring, although the scoring did come from it, but just hitting that one shot and saying, look, I'm going to do this in a way nobody does it, or most people don't do it. And I'm going to see if I can pull it off. And when you do, there's no better reward in the game, I believe.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, so like the other day, I got down to Stream Song and my buddy, Matt Galloway, caddied for me all three rounds down there. If you ever go to Stream Song, folks, if Matt is in town, he's the guy. He's the one you want.
Nice.
He is Michelle Wee's caddy, and obviously right now they're not out on the road, but great guy. Anyway, he picks up the bag. It feels a little light there, fella. And I was like, yeah. He kind of counted them out, and I think, you know, I only had 12 in there or something. And then he said, man, you only got 12. And I said, yeah, I probably only need 7. But, it's funny because when you go out there and you do that, what are you, you know, you're taking 4 clubs or just a handful. You are forced, again, to be more imaginative. And there's a lot of freedom that comes with that. And again, I call it, experimentation, right? I mean, you go out there and you try these things, and what you can find is that you can not only can you pull them off the old clubs, but you can actually pull them off better with the new stuff, and really, you know, whip the ball around in some creative and interesting ways. So, I mean, yeah, I was. And where it shows through, right? So we played, you know, our annual guys trip was down there at Stream Song, like I said, and 3 days, and there's some money games going on, and we're having some fun, but it's pretty competitive. And there were some shots that, you know, to me, you're standing there, it was pretty windy, we had some rain coming in, it was actually kind of fun to play in some funky conditions out there, but especially on a place like that that's kind of a wild and imaginative course to begin with. You know, when you watch some of your friends play and they only really have one or two little, you know, basic stock shots, you can see when that thought process really runs into a wall on certain scenarios. And so, you know, for me, where I have the most fun when I'm playing golf is when I'm in a place that requires, in order to hit a absolute great shot, you have to do something really different and unique and interesting. And to pull that off is when I feel like I've really accomplished something. And, you know, I hit a shot out there the other day on, what is that, 5? Number 6, got the little devil's asshole bunker on it. Great golf hole. The wind was like 30 miles an hour in our face. It's raining. The hole, which is usually almost drivable, was just not, I mean, you couldn't get it even close. I ended up having an 8-iron in. And I hit this little screamer bullet cut under the wind, and I knocked it, you know, to 6 inches. And it was the coolest looking thing. And I mean, and you know, my partner's like, whoa. I'm like, yeah. But the thing is like,
did the other guy just walk off? Did they go?
Yeah. And but you learn how to hit that shot, because when you're playing with a hickory or some old, forged blade or something, sometimes that's the shot you got to hit, you know what I mean? And so that experimentation, I think, yields a lot of really cool moments, even when you're playing with, you know, a quote unquote normal, you know, modern set.
Talk a little bit about Leon real quick. I don't know how you have worked it. I trained Ragsy to be on the golf course, and it blows people's mind when they see me walking along with him. I can take him off leash actually now and walk along the golf course. And when I stop to take a shot and put my golf bag down, or when I'm using the pull carts, just stop, he will stop, go find a shady spot, lay down. And when I start to move forward again after I've hit the shot, then he hops up and walks along with me until the next shot. I trained him to stay off the greens. I trained him, to kind of know where he can go. And it blows people's minds. So talk a little bit about Leon and just the joy. I mean, you strike me as a guy who plays golf by himself some, like I do. You know, the joy of just being out there for a walk with your dog and hitting golf shots.
Yeah. Again, I go back to when I was a kid. Yep, played with my dog damn near every day. It didn't even occur to me as a unique thing. It just was, you know, she kind of had free reign over the neighborhood as it was. And when we went, she just came along. And, you have things like that sometimes when you're a kid that you think are just perfectly normal, and then you almost forget about them. And years later, you know, when I got Leon, I wasn't playing as much golf when I first got him. And we used to just go walk all over Tallahassee. I mean, I'd have him, you know, on a leash. I mean, walking through city parks. I mean, I lived kind of in the middle of town, and we just walk out the front door on a Saturday morning. We'd go walk for 3 or 4 hours, and and just have these sort of adventures, right? And once I started really playing a lot more, and I joined our club out here at Capital City Country Club, I said, well, you know, shit, I don't know why I wouldn't take him out on the golf course and I would go play. And especially, you know, these little sort of, you know, evening nine-hole jaunts and stuff. And I just kind of showed up one day and brought him out there with me. I don't put him on the leash or anything. And because we had such a good walking relationship, you know, he just treated it just like he did anything else. And, you know, I didn't ask anybody for permission. I'm kind of tend to be a pretty big fan of the ask for forgiveness, not permission school of thought. But I didn't say that too loud, so my wife didn't hear it. But you know, with Leon, we just started doing it, and he really took to it, and I enjoyed it. It was kind of a nice way to have a little company out there and hear somebody, you know, to bounce my crazy thoughts about the game off of without, you know, looking at me like I'm too nuts. And yeah, I mean, he just loves it. He can't get enough of it. I got me a little dog bowl that I slap on the bag that kind of collapses to keep him well watered out here in this Florida heat. But he loves it, and I love it, and we have a lot of fun together. And you certainly get some funny looks. But the coolest thing, you know, to me is I think we help kick off a little bit of a cool culture shift out of our club. I mean, there's definitely 7 or 8 guys now that take their dogs out there and walk them around, and I think there was maybe some FOMO once the people saw how much fun we were having. And it's really cool when we get a gaggle of them out there together and go out. I mean, it kind of looks like an afternoon at Sunningdale, you know.
That's outstanding.
I'm jealous of both of you for being able to take your dogs out and play. I think it's the greatest thing. Let's move to a place, just finally, we could go through every chapter in the book. And I mean this seriously. We could go through
every one. Wait, we're not doing that?
We could do that because there's so much chock full in every chapter. But I also want people to read this book, Jay.
Yeah.
But let's close in terms of just a discussion of the book with what I think for any traveling golfer, and certainly anybody who's been to Scotland, there's tons of people who haven't. I know most golfers who haven't, it's a bucket list trip. For those of us who have, it's a place you talk about courses haunting you. The whole country haunts me constantly. I'm convinced I've spent numerous previous lifetimes there. But your ability to describe it, this is what great writers do. They take something that is common ground, as you were talking about, to all of us, and put it in a way that we can relate to and really tug at your soul when you're reading it. And this part did that for me. When you talk about Scotland in your mind, and you'll just kind of give a brief rundown of this, but the quote that killed me, because this is so says it, how strange it must be for those people who believe they are in their neighborhood, while I know it's really Scotland. Tell us why you say that.
Yeah, there's no way to tell you how much pain it causes me that I have not been over there yet. And I've had 2 or 3 that sort of opportunities that have fallen apart. And I won't go too
okay, wait,
deep.
Wait, Jay,
yeah, go ahead.
Before you start this, you're telling me you have not been to Scotland.
I've never been. Never been.
Okay, I might correct me if I'm wrong. I don't believe that would have become apparent in that chapter. Did you say at some point I've never been there?
Yeah, I talked about it kind of being a daydream of mine, right? I mean, so for me,
this is so interesting.
I have read everything you can read. I've listened to everything you can listen to. And as crazy as this is going to sound, I sort of have sometimes an inability to pull the trigger, inability to say yes to certain things, right? I can, as some writers will do, I can overthink things. And I have not been to Scotland. And so, you know, for me, that piece, Scotland down the street, is is really about, even though that I have spent so much time thinking about the way they play the game over there and studying it and understanding it, it's my attempt to try to bring that way of life into my own life here. And it's sort of a, even though I can't be there where I feel my soul constantly tugging me to go, you know, and there's sort of that piece in there about, you know, having a wife and a kid and a job and, you know, yard to mow and all these other duties that I feel like probably keep me from pulling certain triggers. I try to have my version of a Scottish life, you know, here in Tallahassee. And, you know, in that piece I talk about, you know, walking down the street, you know, with my clubs, you know, on my back and living three blocks from the golf course and using that as a way to transport myself to somewhere that unfortunately I don't get to spend much time. So, you know, again, if it were up to me and I didn't have this wonderful life that I do have, there ain't no doubt I'd be living over there. You know what I mean? So yeah, it kind of haunts me. And for some reason I haven't been able to pull the trigger. I was supposed to go over there about 2 years ago, actually to a friend of mine's wedding. And that actually fell apart, about 30 days before he was going to get hitched. So I'm still kicking him for that one. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Well, your marriage ended, but I didn't get to go to Scotland.
Right, right. You know, so that's on him. But, it's going to happen. I'm going to do it. It's also one of those things where, like, sometimes you get so sucked into reading about these places. You know, I read Lauren Rubenstein's Season in Dornick last summer, and I just...
Isn't that great?
It just made me hurt.
Isn't that great?
Oh, my God, what a phenomenal book. I mean,
yep.
And you just... And again, and the most profound thing about that book is just that he's just telling you this, just what it's like to be there every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, man... These folks have got it figured out. You know, they're not concerned with a lot of the, you know, things that eat up so much of our lives. And, you know, so for me, I that piece is kind of about trying to take that philosophy of life and insert it a little bit more into my day-to-day living here in Tallahassee. And, you know, one of these days, I think I am going to have a residence over there. My ancestors come from Scotland, and I've just always had a lot of you know, pride in that, and a lot of interest in that heraldry over there. And yeah, so one of these days, I'm going to go, and you know, maybe I'll come back.
I loved, and again, when I read it. And while you were talking, I just kind of checked the beginning of that chapter, and I literally assumed that the reason you felt that way, because you're so descriptive of a small Scottish town by the sea and walking those streets, the whole way you write about it, I just assumed you had been there, because having been there, like I said, and Darren feels the same way, I have dreamed about living there half the year. My wife's Swedish, and we've talked about at some point, when things change in our life, about being able to go there for 2-3 months a year and then Sweden for the rest of the year.
So, yeah, I mean,
kudos for writing it, man, because it can give people, once you read it, I just thought it's such a great way to look at something that you might yearn for and figure out a way to get it into your everyday life.
Yeah, that's kind of the thinking. And, you know, again, we talk about, you know, sort of golf as addiction. I'm a little bit scared to go because, again, I it's like what we were talking about, you know, with these places that haunt you. I do kind of worry that if I, you know, when I go, it might be kind of hard to come back. You know,
people are going to say, anybody seen Jay lately?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm telling,
honestly,
you will.
That's kind of the dream, right? I mean, isn't that kind of the dream, you know? Anybody seen Jay lately? Nope.
You know, what we could do is what my friend Paul Himmel's back here in Myrtle Beach, who owns 3 or 4 golf courses. He and I have always talked about at the end of our golfing days. His father, like your grandfather, played till he was 90 or so, and refused to move up to the senior tees till he was 86.
Oh, wow.
And they amputated one of his legs at the knee.
Holy cow.
That's when he moved up. He finally conceded. But Paul and I always said, why don't we take the friends we've made over the years who share the love of the game and go someplace like Scotland, someplace we all love, wherever it is, and put down some housing right there so we can all spend those days together.
And wouldn't that be cool?
I thought, what a great way. So maybe we'll all do it in Scotland. Who knows?
I like that.
Darren, anything before we close just about the nine virtues of golf and the 280,000 virtues of Jay Revel?
I think we've got off to a good start. Obviously, we're going to need to have Jay back. We're going to have him on an Emergency 9 episode. We haven't done one of those in a while, so that's coming up in the next episode. But, as always, it's just it's a pleasure talking to you and so much fun. And nice that we recorded it this time as opposed to one of our late-night chats when we just hop on the phone and talk about all things golf.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I can't thank y'all enough for having me on and talk about the book a little bit. And I will be lying to you if I didn't tell you that one of the ulterior motives for writing the book was to make enough money to pull off that dream Scottish trip. So let's you can be a part of this. You can help that dream come true. So, but I really do appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to come on and talk about it. It's been a labor of love and, something I've really enjoyed working on, and don't be surprised if those little daily golf stories you keep reading turn into the sequel. So stay tuned.
I thought you were gonna say that you wrote the book just to get on Talking Golf Getaways. I thought that's where that was going.
Well, that too. I had to cook up a scheme to find him. It seems to be working out.
He'd be lying if, Darren.
Yeah, exactly.
So that kind of falls in that
right.
area. Well, we loved it. We'll get to the Emergency 9 in the next episode, and I know there's going to be some fun stuff in there too. So I echo Darren. Thanks for being with us. As we get out of here, I love the closing to the book too, Jay. You talk about golf as a solution to much of what's going on in the world now, the connecting, the sharing, the listening to others, the appreciating what we have, while we're all centered on golf, and couldn't agree with it more. Here's the quote I'm going to leave you who are listening to this. Feel the weight of the bag you tote filled with hope on your shoulder. Admire the grass, the wind, water, and earth as you stroll with sky above. Carry your clubs, walk, and remember why golf is the game you love. It says it all pretty well right there. Thanks to Jay Revel for everything he does for us all. Again, the book is The Nine Virtues of Golf. You can find Jay on Twitter at Jay Revel, on Instagram at Jay Revel Writes, or jrevel.com. And I highly suggest you go there. Amazon, again, you can pick up the book. And once you start it, it's going to be really tough to put it down. Darren?
Well, as always, we have to thank the listeners. We couldn't do it without you. Keep in contact with us at Golf Trip Experts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you have the chance, rate us on iTunes so we can continue to spotlight the best in golf travel.
Amen. No one takes Tom Petty's words more to heart than Jay does. Thanks again to him for being with us. All of you out there, keep on running down your dream. So long.